Hey everyone, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs comes to you live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can catch us on twitch.tv/wanderingdms or youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi everyone, welcome to Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan. On this episode of Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking with special guest Emma Lambert, who is Communications Director for WebDMs, a enormously successful YouTube streaming channel with over, 170,000 subscribers at last check. So clearly, Emma, you are doing something very right. welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. I don't want to take sole credit for it. Everybody's pitching in over at WebDM, but yeah, we're happy with where we are. I'm so glad to be here.
Start off and tell me, so, I mean, sometimes we imagine having talented staff around us, such as yourselves, but we're not at that point yet. What do you do as communications director for WebDMs?
Okay, I do a lot of things. So the first thing I do is I run basically all of our public communication. So our social media, Patreon, I do when we do our videos, I do all of the, basically if it's writing, if it's words, then that's what I'm doing. I do all the metadata, titling, descriptioning, all of that. And I do a lot of sort of businessy stuff. I like doing business things. I like doing like bank accounty money things. I do that, and I'm also one of the co-writers of things that we put out. Like we're on here in just a couple of months, I think, the Epic Legacy Campaign Codex with 2C Gaming. We wrote a section there, and so I was able to be a part of that, and it was great. And I also helped develop the shows. I'm on our Patreon podcast quite frequently. We do a lot of stuff. We're a team of four, so we have to have a lot of hats.
That sounds very interesting. I'm sure very, very appreciated, because not everybody likes the metadata banking accounting tasks that really have to be done with something like this.
No, I love doing like search engine optimization. Like if you guys are streaming on YouTube right now, you must have to do some of that. I love like figuring out tags, and it's like a nice little game. You get to figure out what the best thing to do is. I most definitely do not do all the hard work. Definitely not. But I have the things that I like to do, and I like to do them well. It's a good time. We have a lot of fun.
Awesome. So allegedly, the main topic that we wanted to talk with you today, Emma, about is conventions and how they tie into someone doing streaming work, and you know how you can use that to network and stuff like that. So how many conventions do you go to in a year?
So last year I went to D&D Live, PAX East, and PAX Unplugged. And the guides went to a couple more that I wasn't able to go to. My convention attendance is somewhat hampered by the fact that we have a three-year-old. And he gets sad and misses us a lot when we are gone. So I can't go quite as much as I want to. But ideally, this year we're looking at going to a few more. We wanted to go to Gary Con, but we're probably not going to. We're going to go to Gen Con for the first time. Knock on wood. And we're probably going to look at a couple of others, like maybe Origins, depending on what's going on our schedule.
We've got some folks in the chat recording some odd audio problems. I'm really sorry about that, guys. Can I just get it confirmed from folks in the chat that you're able to hear me? Appreciate it. Sorry.
And I'll just so if folks can hear Paul right now, we could, if someone in the chat could tell us that, that would be helpful.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, I just changed some settings around, so hopefully that helped. We will see, though. Sorry. And we're getting a little static, and they can hear me now, so I'm gonna keep going. Dan and Emma, please continue to chat, and I will do what I can on my end.
What is, so Emma, your what's your ratio of like small to large conventions? Because nowadays Paul and I go to a couple like regional conventions with maybe like 5 or 10,000, and we haven't gone to the really huge ones like Gen Con in a while. Are you more focused on like the really big ones, or do you go to like some smaller regional ones?
I have not been able to go to that many regional ones, partially because we live in northern New England and it's kind of like they're all far away. There's a couple right around where we are. I think we went to like a Comic-Con up here once and it was maybe a few hundred people. A lot of people with like a lot of furries. But mostly we've been to the larger ones for like work purposes. Those tend to do better for us, but the guys attended RingCon in Phoenix, Arizona as special guests last year. And that was a much smaller one. I think it was right around like 6,000 people. And they had a really good time just hanging out and playing games with people.
I sympathize with the difficulty of getting, so I grew up in Maine myself, and I did not, like growing up, I did not have the capacity to, you know, get to a gaming convention or really know that that was even a thing except for what I read in, you know, magazines. So it's kind of been nice to, like, as an adult to actually have that begin to open up for me, because I totally know what it's like being in northern New England and being almost impossible to get to places that you want to.
Absolutely. When I was 13, I almost ran away to go attend the New York Comic Con. I don't know why I didn't just ask somebody to like take me, but I was like, I'm going to go and I'm going to have to leave my family to attend this nerdy thing. I think it was probably because I didn't want anybody to know that I wanted to go.
That's a good sign, and Paul has a good similar story, and I wish that I'd been as brave as either one of you.
Oh. I'd never actually been through with it.
Yeah.
What's your story, Paul?
You know, when I was maybe 15, I just pleaded with my father to go to Gen Con. Everything I had read and seen in the back of magazines, I was like, this is it. This is Mecca. I have to go to this thing. So he took me, that first year, across, you know, flew us out to Milwaukee, and the guy, went to like, I think he went to ball games during the day. He would drop me up in the convention center and go to a couple ball games and then come back and pick me up. And God bless him for doing that. I don't know. I would have patience for that kind of thing.
That's amazing.
That was my first trip to Gen Con. And then I guess just proved that I was, you know, after a year, he discovered like, okay, it's not dangerous. It's not scary. There's nothing weird going on here. And then he would just send me, go. I don't want to go to Milwaukee.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
On my end, when I was 13, I actually really, 12 or 13, I think I really wanted to go to a D&D summer camp for a week. And that's one of the biggest arguments I ever had with my father. That went over real poorly.
That's amazing.
We made up later, but that was historically not well received. So, conventions. Now that we all have the self-actuated ability to actually go to conventions, Emma, what do you use your time there for? Like, are you doing business stuff? Are you networking? Are you actually playing in games mostly?
I tend to split it up a little bit. I didn't go to too many conventions before I was going as part of WebDM. I went to a few here and there. I'm really introverted, and it actually is really helpful for me to have something that I'm doing where it's like, oh, this is not because I'm choosing to and then can talk myself out of and going because I need to. I try to split it up. I've had some where I do all working, and those are intense. But like, say this last time at PAX Unplugged, I was able to play 5 different games and 5 different systems, over the weekend. And that was great, and still did my sort of networking, trying to say hello to people I've never said hello to before, and, you know, checking in with people that I don't get to see outside of convention. But yeah, it's a great opportunity. Our goal for going to conventions, for mine, it's partially schmoozing. But for the guys, by and large, it's about meeting with people who are fans of us and having that sort of access, but especially just playing games and being excited, and being inspired by getting to play stuff you wouldn't normally otherwise get to play.
So how do you approach signing up for games at conventions? Because this is something I feel like I've talked to a lot of folks about, where they feel like there's a very good chance when they're just cruising through the convention catalog and looking for games that sound fun, maybe a system they love that they don't get to play very often, and they pick it and they show up and it's just bombs, right? Just like the DM is terrible or the players are terrible and they're like, why am I here? I could have stayed home and played with my friends.
Yes. I have had that happen before.
Yeah.
Not in a long time. It's one of those risks that you run. My recommendation is, if it's really bad, especially if you're in a situation, I know personally being a woman, there's always a risk of going to a convention and playing in a game with a bunch of people you don't know, that you're going to get in a situation that's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And leave. Like, just if it's bad, just like, oh, I'm so sorry. My girlfriend just called and, you know, she needs my help or whatever.
I absolutely did that at Gary Con, and it was the first time I just left an event in my life. So like maybe now 2 years ago, Gary Con, and Paul was my excuse. So I totally claimed that my friend had called and he was sick and I had to leave. So
awesome.
I can confirm that strategy felt like it worked really well.
I mean, the funny thing is, so I've had a friend who got out of a game who just said, you know what, this isn't fun for me. I'm not contributing to the game. I'm not making more fun for everyone else. I think I should leave, which is like brutally honest and delightful.
That's false.
I could never do that.
Me.
I wish I was that person. I wish I was that brutally honest, and I'm not. So
yeah.
You know, it's funny because you mentioned that you consider yourself to be an introvert, and I think that many of us probably would say the same thing. And I think I've said on the show in the past that, you know, the role-playing hobby has been really good for some of us to be able to, like, practice what it would be like to be an extroverted person, you know, before the chips are actually on the table. And some of our viewers have really, really strongly reacted to that. Do you think that role-playing has actually itself has helped you in that regard?
I don't think it has helped me because I think there's no help for me, but I do think that it is definitely a great way to get that sort of practice. I think more than the role-playing aspect, having a group that you play with and get to know and share these things with, I think that's probably the more important thing to me. You know, a lot of what I do with WebDM is sort of answering people who want to talk to us. And so a lot of the times I'm talking to people about how to figure out what's going on with their group, figure out what's going on with their party. And I think having that sort of like, you've got this group, you've got this little micro community that needs to work. And in that, you also need to have fun. And how do you make those two things happen? For me, I know has been really helpful throughout the years. If we hadn't been role-playing, I don't think, I know I wouldn't have had nearly as big of a chance to really get to know Pruitt as early as I did. Because that's what we did together, and that's how we bonded.
I noticed that you guys have a whole playlist just on the issue of, like, problems at the table and problem players, right?
We do.
Like, yeah. 17, 20 videos just on that. And we, like, Paul and I have touched on that kind of stuff a couple times here,
mm-hmm.
and it's obviously something that comes up with conventions as well. So if you've had the opportunity to deal with, like, a whole bunch of people asking questions, what are your, like, top two or three pieces of advice in that regard?
My top two or three pieces of advice are, number one, never try to deal with out-of-game problems inside a game.
Okay.
That is, if there's something that's going on between people and not characters, you need to talk to the people as if they are people. And probably don't assume ill intent unless you're positive it's there. That's probably a big one that we talk about a lot. And also, no gaming is better than bad gaming.
I've heard that a couple of times recently, and I think that's so. So I really I'm interested in your first axiom of,
yes,
don't deal with out of game stuff at the table, because in the original Dungeon Master's Guide, you know, that is clear at the you know, era of first edition stuff, that is clearly not something that was ever said. And
no.
Gary Gygax in the first DM's Guide explicitly says, if someone's acting out, hit them with a divine lightning bolt from the heavens, and that will teach the lesson. So what,
yes,
I'm hearing here, Emma, is that you are bad mouthing Gary Gygax's advice.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that correct?
Post it to Twitter immediately. Yes, I am. I think that if your goal is to have a group that wants to come back and play all the time, number one, that kind of hierarchical thinking is probably going to need to not be part of your game. I'm talking from the perspective of having a group that's played together for 15 years now. And I think that a lot of the time there are communication issues that come up between people that masquerade as things in the game. And when you link one to the other, it's very easy for things to get very complicated. I've had a lot of, like, questions where people are like, my player wants to do this with their character, and I don't want them to do it. So what do I do in the game to convince them that it's not a good idea to do this thing? And the answer is, well, you could, but that's not going to make sure that they know that you don't want to do the thing. And it's valid if you don't want to do the thing. Like, if you don't want to create a custom subclass for this one person to do a thing and you're going to play for 3 more weeks, then don't do it. But I find it a lot easier, and it avoids making sort of railroads out of issues. That's what I think. So yeah, sorry, Gary. I think you're wrong. That might work perfectly well in a convention game, which is by and large, like, so often what Gary would do.
I mean, nowadays I feel like that is probably, maybe that worked for his group or something like that, but that seems like that might have been one of the major oversights of, like, the stuff that he was writing, is to fail to make that distinction, because I have a real hard time imagining that working anywhere for anybody.
Yeah, and it's kind of an interesting progression. You know, if you're talking about it coming from, you know, wargaming, where it's like, you are the referee and you're impartial, then why are you doing that to people? It doesn't quite make sense to me.
Yeah.
But I also was there. I know for me, in my games, the times that I've dealt with that sort of dynamic just doesn't work very well.
So Paul, I know that you're dealing with your tweaking.
Yeah, I'm sorry, guys.
Do you have? Does that? But I want to make sure there's room for if you have insights to those, because I think that you've actually dealt with like more difficulties at the table than I have in my like incredibly good fortune. Are you? You basically agree with Emma was saying. There.
I'm sorry. I admit that I have been very focused on trying to improve our audio problem. It seems to be getting a little bit of a stuttering. Hopefully that the recording part of this is going okay, and I'll re-upload to the YouTube afterwards, and hopefully it's the only problem for live folks. Synopsize for me. What do you want to know if I agree with or not?
Well, the main axiom that deal with interpersonal player stuff out of the game and not try to manage it in the game.
Yeah, I generally agree with that. No, I mean, are you talking about like specifically in between sessions or in midstream of a session, stepping out and stepping back and saying, wait, let's have a player to player conversation for a minute. Let's stop playing D&D for 5 minutes and talk like people.
Well, I don't know. Have you guys ever have both you guys had to do that at some point?
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure. Our games are, there's a lot of table talk at our games when we're at home. There just is. So that kind of interruption isn't necessarily a big deal. And then on streams, you've got a little chat bar and that's private. And so we've dealt with that before. We've dealt with that before. All the time.
Have you not done that, Dan?
I don't think I've ever done that. I don't think I've ever done that. And you know, partly.
Have you ever wanted to do that, or have been in a situation where you think, in retrospect, that may have helped?
I cannot remember that. I mean, the group that I've been with for 4 or 5 years, I have never had any kind of interpersonal problem with. And before that, I was A, young, not super wise, and B, and third, slightly OCD. So when the books don't say it, I didn't have that in my toolkit.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I actually would. If the book says hit him with a lightning bolt from the blue, I would be prone to do that and not think about anything else.
Interesting.
Hopefully now I'm better at that. That's interesting. So nowadays, obviously, there's a lot more tools that people recommend. So all three of us were at PAX Unplugged the fall. And I remember at the RPG sign-up table, they had a stack of papers about here's a variety of tools, the X card, a bunch of other stuff that you could use at your table. Do you use those formalized tools, or do you think those are helpful?
I always have it's been a very long time since I've played a game on stream or a game with people that I don't know very much that hasn't included those. And at the same time, I've also never played in a game where anybody felt the need to use them. Which is probably, you know, reflects well on the people I'm playing with. And that week, you know, I wasn't playing with anybody who's like a complete drinker. I think that having them, especially at a convention game, I played in conventions and like game store meetups and stuff, you know, a million years ago that could have really benefited from things like that had we known that there were things like that that existed. And I think that they're no substitute for good old fashioned communication. I think that is your number one safety tool that everybody needs to have. But I also feel good when they're there because I know that everybody cares a little bit about making sure that things are
comfortable. I feel like that's, and excuse me, folks, because while I talk, I'm going to do something and reset your guys' video. So hang on tight. but I do feel like the main benefit from those tools is simply acknowledging that they exist.
best, right? Yes. Like the X card, for example. I think the best benefit from the X card is that introductory moment where you, as DM, stand up and explain to people what the X card is and how it works. And so just everybody kind of knowing that that exists and that people at the table are thinking about it is really enough.
Yeah, it can be a lot. Oftentimes, almost always, when I've used the X card, I've also used something called Lines and Veils, which is before the game starts. You talk about things that you want to fade to black on and things that you don't want to have exist in your game at all. And it's helpful to just know that that's there. And I think it does ultimately help you push the boundaries of those things. To know that, oh, I'm getting close to this. This is going to be a meaningful moment if I don't push it too far. I played in Tales from the Mist, Ravenloft game on the D&D channel. I was one of the guests in their first season, and we were able to make it really genuinely creepy, which I find is a difficult, like, feeling to pull off in a game, is to make something genuinely scary for you sitting there. And I think that because we had talked beforehand about what is scary enough and what's too scary, that's how we got there.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. I tend to find, like, I tend to stumble into things like I never would have. The things that turn out to be horrible in my games are never the things that I would have pre-planned. It's like I always accidentally discover stuff that mm-hmm. my players respond to that I thought was just factual statements. So I always like stumble into these like, oh my God, please stop moments.
Oh yeah. And that's going to happen. That's going to happen if everybody's invested.
Right.
I think that if you're using safety tools as a way to like pre-curate every possible circumstance, then you're going to be let down. But yeah, for sure, knowing that this is there, and the fact that you have players who are comfortable saying that, stop it, that's gross.
Yeah,
that's important. I know for me, I've never ran a game where somebody hasn't said, stop it, that's too gross for me. I do it a lot. I don't know. It's just me. I like gross things, I guess.
I had a little bit of a bobble about a month ago, actually, in my game. How much do you DM, Emma? Like, what's your DM versus player ratio?
Very, very player heavy.
Okay.
I'm married to Jim Davis, and I am best friends with Jonathan Pruitt, and so there's always somebody else who will run. So I don't do it very much. I've done it, I've only DM'd one thing on stream, and that was my first and only homebrew, and it was about my fifth time to DM. That was in 2018. I ran Escape from Flavortown, as a charity game that we did. Lise Penrose and Satine Phoenix and a couple of other great people were on it. And it was Guy Fieri inspired. It was gross and weird.
cooking based?
Yeah, it was the characters, they woke up in a kitchen. They were the size of a chicken nugget and they had none of their gear and they were breaded and being ready to get fried. That's how it started. And they had to make their way through like this industrial kitchen. And then fight Guy Fieri. Gary Fetty was his name.
That's brilliant. So our viewers may realize that last week we did our one and only food cooking show version of this in Paul's kitchen, right? And we were like, how many times does anyone talk about like cooking and food in D&D? Not that much. We've had at least one viewer say, yeah, you should make like a whole series of like D&D discussions while you're cooking. So,
absolutely. Really Prue funny. And I keep thinking of how to do that because Pruitt makes really good cookies. I went to pastry school. And honestly, I started baking because we played D&D every Sunday and I wanted something to learn how to bake. So I was like, I'm going to bake for D&D and that's how I'm going to learn how to do it. And ended up working as a pastry person for a while.
What kind of pastry training was it? Is it like what school did you go to?
I went to culinary school in Austin, Texas, the Austin Community College.
Okay.
Yes, I got an Associates of Applied Science in pastry arts. I got a certificate in like butcher stuff.
Wow. I teach at a community college myself here in New York, and culinary arts are a large, you know, a large program here actually. So
Yes, I'm a big fan of community colleges. My job before WebDM was working as a mentor for people wanting to apply to college, and talking about that being a pathway for them to do that was always a big thing, because I think they're very important.
That is great work, and I really actually really super appreciate anyone that does that work, because that's incredibly important work.
For sure. Yeah.
No. What is that? No.
Oh, that's amazing. I would play that. Yeah. You play zombies, and it's your goal to bite the heads off of everything.
There is.
Oh no.
Oh no. Okay, so for our viewers' benefit, if you can't hear Paul at the moment, he was just talking about the game. Bite Their Heads? Is that the name of it?
Biting Off Heads.
Biting Off Heads, in which you play with animal cracker tokens and you have to eat other players' pieces, which sounds delicious. Yeah. And we all now think that there ought to be a game, a larger game.
Right, well, that's what I would talk about, is like try to develop some kind of RPG where the miniatures are, like the enemies are specifically, you know, candies or baked goods or something, and then integrate that. I don't know. Of course, you're going to run into problems, especially if you're like, one of the problems I've had with, wow, we're so off topic, but one of the problems I've had with food, incorporating food into a game, is you never know, someone at the table might be diabetic or might have a lactose allergy or whatever. And, what do? You don't want to exclude that person, especially in a convention setting where you don't know who's going to be at the table necessarily. I guess your best bet there is just to arm them ahead of time, make sure it's in the description. This game will include, you know, consumption of lactose.
Yeah.
This game is prepared with nuts.
That should be the title of the game, is this game is prepared with nuts. Oh, right. Gross. And then no, seriously, there will actually be nuts involved.
Yes. In this game. Be careful.
Oh, great. That's great.
I would play that.
Oh my goodness.
So, I played poker with MMs in the past.
I wanted to get back to conventions a little bit. Just because when we were talking earlier, we spoke about all being from the New England area, and it being difficult to travel necessarily to different conventions. I've been tracking conventions around the area and their general attendance for some time, because I'm a big dork. And they all seem to be on the rise to me. And I'll just point out that there's a lot of conventions out there these days. Even in New England, right, there's Carnage in the Mountain in Vermont, Total Con here in Massachusetts. Likewise, I'm actually on the board of directors of a new convention starting in April in Massachusetts called the Rising Phoenix Game Con. I think they're on the rise, and I think we're just going to see more and more of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, does anybody have any advice? Any of us have any advice for our viewers of how to find them, how to, you know, prepare themselves to go to one, how to get the most out of being at one of them? That was a big, broad stroke questions there. I guess just let's start with finding. How does one even find conventions?
That's a very good question. I found the ones that are in my general area. It'll be like somebody at Barnes & Noble told me about one. It's a Rebellion Gaming book. And I'm like, do you know about this thing? And I was like, no, I don't. And then invariably I find a Facebook event page about it. That's the way I've found everything, which is weird because I don't use Facebook. It's just where these things in my experience tend to be. So for you guys too.
I tend to Google stuff. So like in the past, I've gone on like a Google, you know, conventions near me, and composed a spreadsheet list that I keep of stuff that I could potentially go to.
Because you're so serious. You've got spreadsheets tracking everything.
Certainly the internet, right, has made discovery much easier. I would point out that there's services like tabletop events, right? A lot of these conventions are now using a software called tabletop.events to schedule their games, and then you can actually use that to browse and see what conventions are coming up.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people do that, but it exists.
I think I just noticed that like 48 hours ago, actually. I think I clicked on the wrong button and I was like, oh, here's a bunch of other conventions. I think I just noticed that.
But back in the day, certainly my advice would have been like, go to your game store, go to your, you know, comic store, whatever. If they've just got a flyer, it's probably somewhere out there.
Yeah, for sure.
That's interesting. I found that very difficult. And I think the other thing I'm coming around to is like the ones I really want to go to just aren't near me. Like the attempt to find conventions near me was not super useful. And I just need to buckle down and make a decision about, am I going to Gary Con this year? Am I going to North Texas Con this year? Stuff like that. And maybe, Emma, if you're doing it, you know, as part of outreach communications work, maybe it's even more important that you hit the large ones each year?
It can be. I think it's good advice for anybody, whether you're going for a work type thing or not, to identify like what your goals are for what you're doing.
Hey folks, real quick, I'm going to interrupt this real quick because I'm just continuing to see chat about the audio issues. So I'm going to reset stuff a little more violently here. I super apologize for it, but I think it's going to be better for everyone else. If we can just take a quick 2-minute break, is everyone okay with that?
Sure. Great.
Hi everyone, we are back. I'm super hoping that that fixed the audio issue. I'm going to double check it myself. While I do, please, does anybody remember where we were?
Yes. So Emma, it sounded you like had a good insight about what goals, how to pick goals when you're going to a convention.
Yes. In my somewhat limited experience, but in my experience, like in a weekend of doing it, I have time to like do like two things really well. I have time to like do all the shopping I want to do. If we're talking about big ones, I can do all my shopping and I can play lots of games, or I can try to do the panels and play lots of games. But if every time I try to do all of the things, then it feels like I spent all my time running around doing nothing. That's how I feel anyway when I do those things. But yeah, identifying what it is you want to get out of it. I know for me personally, I don't go to conventions to make deals. Because, as aforementioned, I'm an introvert and I'm a writer, so let me write you words. But being there to, you know, make just like a very brief contact for work is something that I can do. I can take lots of pictures and put them on Twitter. And then I can, you know, do the fun things that, you know, remind me why I love my hobby.
That sounds like really good. That sounds like advice like I need to use, because like occasionally, like I'm way righty, right? I'm a righty type person, and I still keep a kind of a verbose blog.
Yes.
And I do have enough spreadsheets to sink a couple battleships. And sometimes I get the advice that I shouldn't approach it like that. Like I shouldn't send an email. I got to make a phone call instead. Or I got to go to a convention. I got to schmooze with somebody to get to know them. Do you feel that you're actually successful doing it with the written word mostly instead?
I find that it depends on what it is that you're trying to do with people. There are some people where it's like, if you're going to make a deal, you're going to make it at a thing, and you're going to go to the after party, and you're going to let this person buy you drinks, or you're going to buy them drinks.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, you're going to have a deal made. But I know for me, I don't work that way. And so trying to make myself work that way will end up with me drunk and crying in a corner of a convention with no deal made. So I'm not going to do it. That has not happened yet for me. I know some other people who've had that kind of thing happen. And so usually for me, it's about making the contact. I want to know how to follow up with them when we are not in the midst of the big thing.
Yep.
And that is, if I do that, then like mission accomplished. That's great. Like, my goal for D&D Live is I wanted to get a picture with everybody. Like, as many people as would take pictures with us, then I'd take pictures. And so we got pictures with a lot of people.
No, these are people generally that you knew ahead of time, that you knew through Twitter or other connections. Is that what you mean?
People like that. The guys got a picture with Patrick Rothfuss because Jim told Patrick Rothfuss that if Jim got a picture with him, then it would really piss off my dad. And it was true. It did. But yeah, like people that, you know, our audience wanted to see, and just people for us. I have a ton of pictures from that are just, you know, what I wanted. I think you might be in a couple, Paul.
Awesome.
I'm not sure if you're like right there, but I think you are.
I'm always up for being in pictures.
Yes.
Paul aren't you briefly in the Wizards promo for that?
I am. Well, yeah, there was a video that was taken there. I don't remember even who put it out, but it was a video about like the resurgence of D&D, right? This very sort of high-level piece about, oh my gosh, D&D is a thing again. And there was a lot of footage from that show, and yeah, I'm briefly in it.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah, I'm That's super, really cool. super pleased with it because like now
it
I can
tends
be like,
to be like
I was really in care. I was in a video with Marisha Ray and Matt Mercer and.
Like, did you get a soundbite?
Was that? I am totally B-roll. I am.
That's okay. It's okay to be B-roll.
Paul tends to get like really near the corner of an image, right? He's either right here, right, or he just barely missed the picture, right?
To be a master photo bomber, that's what you have to do. There's at the end of one of our shows, there's some B-roll we shot there, that's of me giving Joe Manganiello a cookie. And I was a little bit mad because I didn't know that was shooting, and I didn't really want to be on camera giving him a cookie. But he took it and he liked it, so it's
all great.
Call that a success. How far in advance do you plan your convention going?
Less than I should. Okay. It's part of it for us is that we are a business, but we're also like four friends who found themselves running a business. Really this year is the time where we're actually planning it out much further ahead. But in the past it's been, you know, that we say we want to do a thing, and then if we're lucky a month beforehand, we'll actually make the bookings, which is not the best way to do it at all. Not at all.
I keep laughing at these things because it basically just sounds like me answering these questions.
I know.
Like, as Paul knows, these are all the same. Like, I do things about a month in advance and I feel bad about it and all that kind of stuff. And so yes. Over and over again, everything you're saying is just like, yep, that's about what happened for me too.
I wish I had some crazy insight.
Yeah, personally, I'm a habitual planner. I'm usually looking way in advance. But I think with some of these conventions, you have to, right? Like, you're talking about like going to Gen Con. Yeah. And the housing opening up like 6 months in advance. And if you're not there on the day of clicking the button to reserve a room, you're not going to get one.
I'm so screwed. Yeah. It's bad. Yes, it's true. And I am I'm a habitual planner in my personal life. Mm. It's more about making sure that there is like the business stuff happening. And it's complicated. But a lot of it has to do with budgeting. And then there are some things where it's like, we want to do it. And then when we actually think through, like, does this actually conflict with our shoot schedule or something like that? That won't always come up and be apparent until much later because like, oh, we had to bump the shoot up, you know, a week or two or a month or for whatever reason. But yeah, generally if I had my druthers, then I would be doing these things several months in advance. So you have the choice on what you want to do. I don't necessarily like hotels. I'm an Airbnb person because I like having a kitchen. But yeah, you gotta plan ahead unless you want to spend all the money.
That's interesting. You know, I bet Airbnb has really changed the landscape of attending these things. I've only recently gotten into using Airbnbs just for vacation purposes. And tend not to think about them when it comes up to conventions. Now, certainly for like the smaller conventions, usually I want to be in the hotel where the convention is happening because I want to roll out of bed in my pajamas and walk to my game.
I have never done that, and I want to so badly. That would be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I say that, and of course, I would never actually do that. I have to take a shower and not contribute to the funk of the convention.
But that's true. That's important. Thank you for doing your part.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but like, for example, Carnage in the Mountain is on the top of a mountain in Vermont in November. And I've been to that convention when it is like sleeting and horrific outside. So having to travel from some other hotel, even if it's less than a mile to the convention, would be brutal.
That is a good point. Yeah, I live not too far away from that. And that whole area just got 20 inches of snow.
So I'm used to that, I guess, for smaller conventions. But maybe for bigger conventions, if you're going to Gen Con or Origins or one of the PAXs, probably, I would guess that an Airbnb might even be better, right?
We have done, we've done Airbnbs. Well, we did for last year's PAX, or like PAX 2018, we did a hotel that was not terribly close to the convention center. And so then Jim and I got an Airbnb that was much closer to it this time. And that was really helpful. But it was also kind of nice to be a little bit removed from it all. But then again, we're also huge introverts. So sometimes we wanted to have, you know, a reason to say, oh, sorry, I got dinner back at the place. I can't.
That's a good point, right? Having a safe point to retreat to that is quiet and, you know, relaxing is probably actually also beneficial.
Yeah, depending on who you are
and
your composition, like that can be like super crazy important.
I mean, actually, so I have a funny story about this. When I first started attending TotalCon, I knew the convention was nearby. I didn't know anyone who went to it, so I just went on my own and signed myself up for plenty of games that started right at 8 a.m., like an idiot, and was playing games until 10 or 11 at night the night before and then trying to go to bed. And just down the hall, people are having parties and drinking and shouting. And I, you know, am up till the wee hours of the morning and can't go to sleep. And by the end of the 4-day convention, I'm just a wreck. Just an absolute wreck.
Yeah.
Since then, I've met people at the convention, realized that I probably shouldn't sign up for those 8 a.m. games so I can sleep in the morning. Started going to the parties and then realized, oh, I'm the problem now. Oh, no.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Well, that is true, and that is some insider knowledge that if you want to have the full con experience, you have to have the after party.
Yeah. A lot of cons have it, right? And I think that, like, you know, you gotta if you're into it, you should seek it out.
It's definitely if you're an industry person, there are times when you have to go to the party. You just have to go to the party.
Right.
And that's a thing that happens. But that said, I don't always go to the party, and I should, but most of the time we have our toddler with us, even if he's not at the convention. So that means that, you know, at a certain point in the evening, then I have to be somewhere else and then I can go home afterwards. But I know my day is starting at 6 a.m, regardless of what I do.
I feel like a lot of this probably boils back to my one key piece of advice to anyone going to conventions, which is, you know, all these conventions are happening at an annual basis. So the first time you go to a new one, try to go without any objectives. Like, just go and scout the convention. Get a feel for it. Find it. Like, is this one with a lot of after parties? Is this one really focused on the games, right? Is there a lot of industry people or no? It's so much easier to plan year two than it is year one.
That's very true. Yes, I felt that way about PAX Unplugged. I had so much of a better time this year than I did the last year, because I didn't know what I was doing and I didn't know, you know, how to get the most out of it.
Yeah. And I think you want to leave yourself time too, to be open to accidentally discovering something that you couldn't research on the internet ahead of time. Right. Like, like say the after parties, right. That's doesn't really exist, necessarily in the literature.
No. That's true. That's a good point. That's a very good point. And then just games that, you know, pick up. Some of my favorite games that I played at PAX Unplugged were from people who I didn't realize would be there, who I ran into and got to play with. And it was great.
So for what it's worth, real quick, I'm pretty confident our audio issue is resolved. I'm not seeing anybody say anything in the chat, but if anybody wants to double check me, that'd be great. But I'm pretty sure we're good.
Okay.
Great.
So my sincere apologies, Emma, for ruining the beginning of your interview here.
Oh, that's fine. I'm sorry. It's going on, but I know it happens. We've been there on our channel before many times.
It's always the audio. The audio is this regenerating troll of a problem that keeps hitting us over and over again. That someday we're gonna burn it. Someday we're gonna finally figure that out.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah.
It's all good.
So I'm gonna follow up on a threat that I made earlier.
Yeah.
And that is
okay.
Before we run up on the time. So Emma, you mentioned, and we're kind of thinking about future shows, and we're thinking about all of us kind of expanding what we do into further streaming.
Yes.
And you know, Paul about 3 weeks ago started a new streaming show called 10 Dead Rats, which is a modification of Warhammer type rules.
Oh, and cool.
You mentioned that you in the future you quite possibly will be doing some non 5th edition D&D streaming games.
Yes.
Before our show here started. Yes. And we've had multiple friends and multiple viewers say to us that we would have to be flat out insane to do any kind of streaming that wasn't 5th edition. What is your thinking about, is it how much courage does it take now to do non-5th edition streaming games?
I think it takes almost no courage. I think you should do whatever you want. I think that if you're talking about Twitch games in particular, there are so many people doing so many different things that what matters is whether or not you're excited to play it and whether or not you're going to have a good time playing it. And that matters way more than whatever system you may or may not be playing. I think that's why people watch streams, because they want to have people have a good time. And I don't think they're necessarily there, to learn the rules most of the time. They might be there for a certain feel to sort of like get the general gist of what a system might look like. But I think that the second that you start doing things because you're supposed to in an industry that's built around having fun, then you're not quite doing it right.
A lot like advice I've gotten from Paul in the past, just about what system a DM should be running in the first place, not even talking about the streaming yet.
I mean, that's my go-to quote, right, is that the best gaming system is the one that the DM is excited to run.
Exactly. I agree 100%. I also think that if I had to guess, Critical Role's Handbook or Helper just came back with a how-to on how to play Monster Hearts.
I think that's
a weird game. I don't want to play that game. but like, you know, people, Roll20, my friend Lindy is about to run a Call of Cthulhu game on Roll20. We've played way more non-D&D than D&D on our channel. And I think that the way the winds are blowing, I wouldn't be surprised that whatever the streaming scene looks like in the next couple of years, I would expect it to be moving in that direction as people who, you know, might have come to it realize that there's a bigger world out there than D&D. There's totally a market for people who would want to see things that are not D&D.
Great.
Jibes with Dan, something you and I saw at PAX Unplugged. We went to a panel about streaming games. Mm-hmm. And some of the advice there was that first and foremost, make sure you're having a fun game with a bunch of people you like to hang out with, right?
Mm-hmm.
That you can't fake that part. So if you don't have that part, then all the rest doesn't matter.
It's true. There are also a number of sort of fringe benefits if you're talking about a decision to do that sort of thing promotionally, which is that publishing companies are a lot more accessible. Sorry, WotC, but there are some that are a lot more accessible than WotC is. And you might find yourself getting support in ways that might be a lot more helpful. Not more helpful, but helpful.
That's a fascinating point. That's a great point, actually.
Yeah. I know we've been really blessed to be able to work with Monty Cook Games when we do new Monero or Cypher system stuff. Right. They always give us a boost, let everybody know what we're doing. And the same with our Talsorian in one of the streams that I do on Laughlo Lindy's channel. They've been so supportive of us there doing Teenagers from Outer Space, which is a game that you know, I don't know if there are any other streams of that game. I don't think there are.
Right.
But yeah, it's cool stuff.
If you had, if you could wave a magic wand and pick your top three systems to play a game in that aren't fifth edition D&D, what would they be?
Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay Second Edition. What else is an actual system? See, lately I've been like seriously kind of obsessing over story games, just because I think that they kind of like build up skills that you don't always get. But let me see, just what have I played recently? Like, I played Scarlet Heroes at PAX Unplugged. Had a great time. It's like an original D&D hack thing. And Jim and I are about to start up a little game that's just the two of us in that, or something like it. He's doing his own thing with it. But that's really fun. What else do I like? That's top great. Three?
Have you had a chance to check out 4th edition Warhammer Fantasy?
I haven't personally. Jim ran a game of it on Encounter Roleplay right when it came out. And I think he enjoyed it, but I think it was also as a system with it being brand new and coming out was a tricky one to sort of learn on stream.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So we haven't had a chance to really play it ourselves. And third edition when it was that with the dice and all that.
Yeah.
Never played that.
I got to play that once. It was super weird. I don't know what they were thinking.
Yeah. It was at the time, it was just like, it cost that much. Sorry, we can't do it. We were college students.
Yeah.
We could do it.
Yeah. My first experience really with fourth edition was running it at a convention game and then found myself simplifying the rules on the fly because I was realizing I have to teach this system to a table of eight people and it's just too much.
Though I imagine
that might happen with second edition as well, but second edition, at least most people are showing up, have played it before and maybe know it. With fourth edition being brand new, you have to teach more.
I found second edition was like, it wasn't that hard to pick up, but at the time we were also playing like GURPS. So it was, you know, a lot less robust than GURPS. GURPS took us like 3 weeks just to make our characters. But yeah, it's, I really like Warhammer Second.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm super fond of it myself, and it's actually my wife's favorite system as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like it. I'm at the same time, I'm not super picky on systems. I kind of like, I like things that build up story. I like things that build up crunch. I'm sort of waiting for something to really do that in a united way, super crunchy and super story forward at the same time. I don't know if it's possible, but I'd like it if it was. But yeah, I have a good time. I also really like Decipher. You can do a lot with it.
Okay, I haven't played that one. Have you?
No?
Neither have I.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you should do it. It's Monty Cook Games, Numenera. Numenera is basically their setting. Right. It's fun. It's really flexible. But I like it because when you really want to do something that's really well aligned with your character, you have a lot of different ways to make sure that it happens, but at terrible risk to yourself. And that's really fun. It makes you make a lot of choices that way that I find interesting. And, they also have, GM intrusions. So you can basically say, I want this to happen. I'm going to let the GM do something to me.
Yeah.
To give me an advantage on doing it.
That sounds very Fate-like to me.
I have never played that.
Okay, Fate's a a lot of that sort of negotiation of I'm giving up, I'm gonna spend this resource or gain this resource by giving the GM more control over the situation.
Yes, yeah. I think it's fun. I think it takes the right table to make that fun.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a good time and it can and combats go quickly. That's often a thing that I care about.
Yeah, I'm right there.
At the same time, I like Warhammer.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Played a champion once, and we had a session where it was just my battle with somebody else, and that was the whole day. That was everything. Because we just whiffed all the time.
Let me just follow up on one thing. So you're thinking about a game with you and Jim where you're the only player. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So, Paul, you and I should have a show someday just about the issue of, like, solo gaming, yeah. Like games with, like, a solo player. That's, like, a whole topic we should get into sometime.
I agree. I've never really run that, ultimately, myself.
I've never really done it either.
What would you be playing? Like, what class would you be playing?
I'm playing, it's like original D&D-ish thing. What is it? We haven't actually done it yet. I'm playing a version of a character that I play in a lot of different D&D games, which is a paladin named Fabian. He was also my main on World of Warcraft. And he's, I think we're going that he's like a cleric.
Okay.
He's a cleric. I think that's what we're doing.
I've done that a couple times with my partner, Isabel, and sometimes I actually consider like streaming, like actually having a streaming solo game
Or
something like that. And it seemed like to my mind, it seems like a great case for that. Because actually there's two old school modules specifically for solo gaming. There's module 01, the Gem and the Staff, which is one of my favorite modules of all time. That's for a thief. That's for a thief creeping into like a wizard's tower with a whole bunch of puzzles and tricks.
Awesome.
And then there's module 02, which I think is, it's like Up the Garden Path. That's not the right name, but that one is for like a paladin-y cleric elf on a quest type thing.
Nice.
And we even really enjoyed both of those actually. So it can be done and it can be very interesting.
That's good to know. I was raising my eyebrows a bit about how I would ever get past level one, but hopefully I do.
You might just start at a higher level. You might just want
we
to
are not.
Start a character
He's
higher
not
level.
Letting me do that.
Okay. All right. Well then, Emma, you're just screwed.
Right, guys, we're running up against the end of the time here. Does anybody have any final thoughts on convention going?
Emma?
Do it. Try it. Have fun. Don't overplan.
That's great. I really appreciate Emma's experience here today. That I there's a bunch of advice there that I'm going to take myself.
Awesome. Folks, if you have any thoughts yourself on local conventions you'd like to call out, or advice for attending conventions, please leave us comments here in this video. We'd love to hear from you.
Definitely. And remember, as always, that you can like and follow and subscribe to us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch, all by the handle Wandering DMs.
There's also audio-only version podcasts of this show. If you'd like to check those out, you can find them at wanderingdms.com. They're also reflected on all the major podcast carriers, such as Google Podcasts, iTunes, etc. If you are listening to this show on one of those locations, please take a moment to rate and review us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Emma Lambert today, whose insights were totally invaluable, I think. Please watch her main show, Web DMs, that she works on YouTube, plus of all of her other streaming stuff. And as usual, thanks so much to our patrons who support this show here. If you would like to join them, please do check out patreon.com/wanderingdms. Don't forget, we are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern time. So we will be back next week for another thought-provoking discussion.
We'll see you then. Bye, everyone.